Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Breakfast with Boz Detours being served by Wahoo. Breakfast this morning is rather simple. I'm having some granola and yogurt, although not that simple because the granola is homemade from a recipe I got from Amity Rockwell. It is a sourdough discard granola. And the yogurt is also homemade. Gretchen and I have been spending a lot of time in the kitchen. The dairy farmers up here in northern Vermont are going through a very difficult time with milk dumping, so we committed to a local dairy and bought 4 gallons of milk. I never drink milk. I eat a lot of dairy in the form of cheese, cottage cheese, yogurt, but I never really drink milk other than a splash of milk in my coffee. So we have 4 gallons of milk we're trying to go through, so I have resorted back to an old hobby of mine and making my own yogurt. It's actually pretty simple. I just heated up some milk on the stove to 120 degrees, let it cool, mixed in a half a cup of some store-bought yogurt that has good probiotics, and I placed it in our oven that has a pilot light that keeps the oven around 110 degrees for 18 hours, and now I have plenty of homemade yogurt. With some homemade yogurt made, I may never need to buy yogurt again if we continue to keep this culture alive and well. So that's breakfast, and coming up next, a wonderful show of Breakfast with Boz being served by Wahoo. In today's episode, we are going to be joined by 2 multi-sport athletes. And in the endurance space, multi-sport oftentimes refers to triathlon, given they do multiple sports, a swim, a bike, and a run. But the 2 athletes today are much more than just triathletes. We're going to be joined by Cam Wirth and Heather Jackson. Cam Wirth started off his professional career as a rower in Australia. He actually represented Australia at the 2004 Olympic Games. And we're going to be joined by Heather Jackson, who as of 2020 is part of the Wahoo Frontiers gravel campaign. She is also a collegiate ice hockey player. So first, we're going to be hearing from Cam Wirth and then Heather Jackson. Here's a conversation I had with Cam Wirth. He was up in Andorra doing some training, a lot of time on his kicker, a little bit of time outside running around a parking lot nonetheless. So first up, let's hear from Cam Wirth.
Hey, Cam, how's it going?
Good, yourself?
Yeah, doing all right. It's a rainy day up here in Vermont, but yeah, we've had some nice weather.
It's usually raining there, isn't it? Isn't it surprising if it's not raining?
Yeah, well, we're supposed to get snow the next couple of days, so yeah.
Okay. Good weather for being locked down, although I guess you guys are just pretty free roaming up there. You're a bit off the grid, aren't you?
Yeah, we're relatively remote, and the shelter-in-place ordinance here still allows us to go outside, and you know, we have some acreage here to go out and roam around if we need.
Yeah, right. Lucky you.
Yeah, you're up in Andorra now, right?
Yeah. We've been here a few years now.
What's the protocol up there for the moment?
Pretty tight. I mean, they're very tight, actually. I mean, they're same as obviously whatever's around us, France and Spain. It was pretty crazy. I went out for a run. It was Friday. You know, 4 weeks ago exactly, I guess. And a long run, like 2.5 hours, and I had my swimmers on, so I always finish at the pool and I've got a locker and all my gears in there, so I have an easy swim to recover, and then Fallon picks me up from there. But so by the time I'd started my run to get into the pool, it went from normal, like completely normal, every shop open, everything, to shut. Like they wouldn't let me in the gym, and it was basically go home and, you know, don't go outside. That was 4 weeks ago.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Well, hopefully you didn't leave anything too valuable in your locker.
Just some flippers, a keyboard, and some paddles and a snorkel. Things that I'm pretty happy not to see for 4 weeks, to be honest.
Yeah. So what have you been up to the last couple of weeks? Do you have a treadmill at home? I know you have a kicker at home you've been riding on. What are you doing for other training?
Yeah, no, I have. So the first few weeks, I was able to just do a bit of running outside. I, you know, had a chat to the police, and there was a vacant, you know, the car park at the ski station, and just sort of cut laps around there. And I was on my own. There's no one else around, so it wasn't an issue. So I just did that. So that was basically like having a treadmill. I had about a 1200 meter loop, which was pretty flat, and I'm able to just run around there. I haven't done much this week. I've had a bit of an easy week because they're talking about next week allowing everyone, you know, or starting to allow people to go outside and exercise again. So I actually did quite a bit of running last week. I did 110 kilometers or so, but all at 2,000 meters. So I was pretty gassed. It was awesome, actually. I'd get up early in the morning and sort of try and do it, you know, before anyone else was up and awake and out of sight, out of mind sort of thing. And certainly takes a bit out of you running at that altitude, especially for like, you know, 90 minutes or so. And you'd come home and have the most amazing, you know, morning sleep. So it was a bit like rowing, going back to rowing days where you get up at 5 and go rowing, come back cooked and go to bed. So I've been enjoying that.
Good. Well, yeah, I was actually going to ask you, you're an Olympic rower. I'm not sure how many people know that. You're also a U23 world champion rower. Don't have a rowing machine in your house anymore?
No, not here. I do in Tassie. Obviously that was another issue. You know, my wife's American and we had a bit of a choice, you know, 4 weeks ago. We could have gone back to Australia. We could have come back to the US. Her family's in Maryland, which is probably pretty similar to you guys. It's pretty off the grid, that pretty unaffected there, pretty remote. So we could have and her dad's got a rowing machine as well, so I could have actually been in a place where I could have had a lake to swim in and a rowing machine, and you know, or in Tassie I could have had a beach and everything else, but instead stuck in an apartment in Andorra cutting laps around a car park to get some running in and taking the dog for some extra runs to find another excuse to go outside. So but you know, at the time, you know, who would have expected it turned up like this? You know, I mean, you thought, oh yeah, a couple of weeks and that'll get it sorted, but there's sort of no end in sight. So no rowing machine. It's the first time in a long time I've wished I've had one, though.
Yeah, we had a neighbor offer us a rowing machine a couple of years back because they weren't using it, and I was like, oh, that could be nice in the basement. And I realized I'd probably jump on it once and then never use it again. So I turned down the offer.
Oh, it's a great machine. I mean, best bang for your buck exercise there is. In fact, Richie the other day. He's probably worse off than me. He's stuck in Monaco. I mean, can you imagine how confined that would feel?
Yeah.
And he said to me that he was thinking about getting a rowing machine because he was missing his swimming. So, it's a good gadget.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how has this changed your year plan? I mean, you obviously you raced professionally on the road for a handful of years. We raced together when you were at Liquigas. And then you stopped racing road bikes professionally, pursued triathlon and more specifically Ironman. You set the course record at Kona a couple of years back, but now you're back racing on the road with Team Ineos, but you're also still doing triathlon. What are your plans for the rest of the year, kind of balancing those two?
Yeah, well, I guess the best way to answer that would be what we planned under a normal circumstance. And that was basically, my role on the team was, you know, is basically just a fill-in. You know, I as you know, back when you were with the team, I was sort of always around. I remember I was staying at the team house once. You popped your head in the door. That's how you met my wife. Back in 2017. So the team's obviously had, you know, indirectly, quite a lot, you know, to do with my transition into triathlon. And obviously, all my, you know, sponsorships and everything have been done through the team, through, you know, with Carsten and so forth. So that's been quite a long term thing. And then we actually talked about me having this role on the team as far back as 2017 into 2018. But that was sort of when the Sky stuff sort of happened and that kind of, you know, got kind of put on the back burner and then of course now it's sort of then sort of morphed into Ineos and with that I guess what I'm doing and sort of supporting what I'm doing in Ironman became even more in line with with the team and the the overall organization of the Ineos, you know, the sporting group. So that was where that, you know, really kind of came about, you know, to the point it is now where I'm a member of the team, but but obviously the focus is Kona. And the idea was that I'd be able to fill in, you know, where the team was short. As you know, it's one thing, you know, the last thing anyone wants, you know, I've been with you guys on camps and whatever, and an athlete gets told, oh, you've got to go and race Pays Basque or Copa Bartoli or some place where you really don't want to be, and you were planning to be going to, you know, Catalunya or the Giro or Romandy or something much, much better, and all of a sudden there's a spanner in the works. So the idea was that I'd be able to fill that gap to avoid, you know, disrupting riders' programs.
Yeah.
And so the plan was to do that pretty much until, you know, leading up to the tour. Obviously, I wouldn't be needed for that. I guess unless there was 25 guys that got injured, they might need me for the tour. But I literally was reserved for basically every single race, you know, every single race. So, but yeah, from once the guys went off and did the tour, then I would focus on preparing for Kona, which is in October. So, yeah, I had a schedule of sort of, you know, 1 to 2 races a month up until July, and then the focus would be full time on Kona. But, you know, in between races, it wasn't like I was focusing on learning, you know, on getting better at bike racing again. It was, you know, I'd continue my training as normal, and I guess the racing would just give me a bit of a boost when I was doing that. But, you know, it definitely was a bit of a shock to the system. I mean, 5.5 years away from the top flight bike racing is a long time, and you think that you can do it because you train with the guys, but it's very different being in the bunch. And not only that, the sport's moved on so much in that time as well. So it took me a couple of days to get my legs under me again, but you know, by the last day of Algarve, I was certainly, you know, back to being closer to the front than the back and able to get over a couple of climbs and feel like I was actually part of the race again. So I'm looking forward to it when it restarts again. If it does, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that a lot of people don't realize is, you know, they jump on a bike and they have a power meter, or they jump on, you know, a spin bike or something at a gym, and they said, oh, you know, I can do 5 watts a kilo, I'll be fine in a race. But yeah, as you've, you know, described, obviously you're, you know, the biggest threat at Kona on a TT bike. But, you know, I mean, racing at the world tour level is so much different than just the power. There's all sorts of tactics and being in the bunch. And while, you know, you definitely have the strength, it's definitely, obviously, like you said, takes some time to kind of regain those skills and just that feeling of being in a bunch moving along at 40K an hour.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the craziest thing is that skills wise, I'm better than I probably was before. I mean, I haven't had any hairy moments. I haven't crashed yet. Haven't even had a flat tire, you know, and I feel very comfortable. And Tim Kerrison, you know, we're both very familiar, my coach, he feels that he wasn't surprised by that part because I ride at, you know, 40 to 45K an hour when I race now. So I'm actually quite comfortable going quickly. So that part of it was sort of okay. The biggest issue that we found which we kind of didn't expect was how your energy system is so adapted to an Ironman. I mean, it's like now if you look at the track cycling, it used to have, you know, if you go back even to 2008, you know, guys would ride the Tour de France, jump on the track for 2 weeks and win an Olympic gold medal, you know, the British, the British, for example, or the Australians. Whereas now, you know, that just doesn't happen. You know, you don't even make the team now. And I think Ironman, you know, in the last few years has become, it's obviously gone to quite a new level. You know, we've seen the race record drop considerably and even just overall times of all races get a lot faster. And, you know, I've certainly physiologically and metabolically, I guess, energy system-wise, adapted to that. And so the way you burn fat, you burn sugar and everything. So the one thing I noticed in the bike race, like at Cadel Evans race, which was the first one I did, which was in the gutter from the gun, and we were the ones doing it, a couple of pulls and I was out of gas. Like, I was empty. You know, I had no glycogen stores left in the muscles. Like, I had not trained that sort of, you know, 600, 700, 800 watt burst, you know, for 10, 20 seconds and then a bit of recovery and then going again. I hadn't done anything remotely like that for so many years. And I was just out of fuel, like empty. You know, I was just eating flat out all day. And And that's probably been quite an eye-opener, you know, but a good one because, you know, it shouldn't be easy. You're talking about the best guys in the world. It shouldn't be easy just to – I mean, Vanderpoel makes it look pretty easy, but, yeah, he's a bit of a special character, I guess. And look, to be fair, what he does, mountain bike and, you know, cyclocross is a little bit more – you know, it's just basically a bike race. A road race is an extended version of that. So it's no surprise that those guys are so good. But yeah, I think, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, if we get back on, if there's some more racing this year, if how quickly you adapt. But I certainly seem to adapt. You know, every day got more and more used to it. But I think the fueling was probably also was one of the biggest things. Is how quickly you just ran out of gas, like realizing how specific your energy system becomes.
Yeah, no, that's true. I actually have just taken a couple easy weeks here, and I did a ride the other day and just did 3 hours, and I popped. You know, I was over in Nice at the end of February and did a bunch of long rides and came back here, you know, after just a couple weeks more mellow. And I, you know, your body adapts to how you're fueling it and how you're training, and with Ironman being longer, consistent efforts and then jumping into a road race, it's a completely different animal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it certainly was. But anyway, it was good. I wasn't the first one dropped, and it was a bit of a baptism of. I felt a bit strange. Obviously, coming back with that team helps a lot. That gives you a fair bit of respect straight away, having that jersey on, which I certainly noticed. But you know, I was definitely one of the first to line up, and for the neutral major, I was on the bumper of the commissaire car, so that I wasn't the first one out the back. And fortunately, we put it in, you know, as I said, it was crosswinds, and we put it in the gutter, and Luke Rose, the king of that, and just told me what to do. And soon we had a nice small group, and, you know, unfortunately the wind, changed direction after about 50K or so, and it sort of came back together, but it was a nice way to break the ice. And after that, it was just, you're just one of the guys again. So it was good.
Yeah. Well, you didn't really take a hiatus when you were in your transition between, you know, road cycling and triathlon. You mentioned to me the other day that you were the winner of the 2015 Belgian Waffle Ride.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. I mean, that first year, that year when I went to America, moved to America, Canada, you know, got me to said if I'd like to be an ambassador for them, I could, and if I moved to the US for a couple of years, that, you know, while I decided what I wanted to do with my life, they, you know, they said it's better for you to have a job, you know, and to look for a real job than what it is to just be a bum and unemployed. And that was one of the best things that, you know, I mean, that was so good of them. They didn't need to do that. And it was an incredible thing. And they actually didn't ask anything of me. One of the things they did ask me to do, that they suggested, said that I might enjoy, was there was three things. There was the Oceanside half Ironman triathlon, which was actually, I think, the week before the Belgian Waffle Ride, the week before or the week after, and I was very close. I went down and spent the week in Encinitas anyway, and then the Ironman in Whistler. And aside from that, they really didn't know very much of me at all that entire year. It was pretty awesome. But, Belgian Waffle Ride, I did it that year. And, I mean, to be honest, back then it wasn't what it's like now, obviously. And I didn't really see it as a race. I didn't think it was. I thought it was a Grand Fondo, which, you know, back in those days, we all thought Grand Fondos were just mass participation, bit of fun. I had a Synapse, Cannondale Synapse, so just a road bike. And, after about, you know, 20K, I realised these guys are serious. There was team cars there, and I remember Ryan Trebone was there on his cross bike, and everyone was attacking and carrying on. And, I just hung in there, and I had a flat tire. I had to change that, so lost some time and had to catch back up. And I ended up catching back up to whoever was in the front. I think it was Trebone and someone else just before Double Peak, the last climb, and sort of dumped them there and ended up, you know, finishing before anyone. I don't like to say I won it. I like to say I finished before anyone else did. I don't really think it's a race. And at the time, I wasn't proud of that. Everyone said, you know, you won. I said, how do you win a ride? But, it's incredible what it's grown into. But yeah, I guess I was doing this stuff before any of you thought it was a profession.
Yeah.
So, they keep asking me to come back, but yeah, I'd get my backside handed to me now with you, Blake. So I'll take my one win. I'll just claim it. I'll just claim that I'm a champion and I've moved on.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll have you back for like a 10-year anniversary or something.
Yeah, exactly. That when I retire for the next time.
Yeah, well, what do you have in your future? I mean, like I said, you started off as a rower, then you became a cyclist, triathlete, you know, kind of back to a cyclist. You love endurance sports. What does your future hold?
Yeah, that's it. I love sport, man. I love exercising. I mean, that's one of my favorite things. And I think being exposed to the team, as said, you were there when I was first around in 2017, you know, being able to train with, you know, the guys, you know, at that level, maybe all of a sudden for the first time ever, to be honest, have a lot of belief in my own ability, you know, being able to train alongside, you know, particularly Chris, that I spent a lot of time with in 2017 and then, you know, into 18 and then G, obviously predominantly 18, 19, Pavel Sivakov, you know, up here in Andorra, we trained together pretty much all the time. And obviously Teo's here as well, now Rowan. But, you know, being able to train with those guys, and it gives you a lot of belief in yourself. So that's been the small transition that I've made from just enjoying exercising to going to races and actually believing I can succeed and having some personal success. So, yeah, I've sort of got, I think, you know, about 4 to 5 years, I'll be 40 by then, and put everything into that now, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, I want to do as much as I can. And if I can do it across a couple of different disciplines, that would be phenomenal, you know, for that long at the highest level. So yeah, I definitely don't want to stop anytime soon. I love it. I really love it.
Do you or Ineos have any interest in gravel? I mean, maybe, who knows, maybe the team could hire me back and I could be a fill-in rider for the road and do gravel here in the US.
Yeah, I'm not sure. A couple of the guys have got gravel bikes. I think G's got one and Broomy's got one. I don't know if they've ever actually used them. But yeah, no, I think there's always a possibility, isn't there? You know, I mean, the sport's evolving so much. You see what, you know, EF are doing with their guys there. I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, that was even something, you know, we spoke about, not so much for myself. I wasn't really interested, to be honest, in going back to sport. I mean, the main reason I moved to America was I wanted to work in finance. And I just happened to do a couple of triathlons and I did enjoy them, but that really wasn't the reason I got into triathlons. The reason I ended up back in sport was I was home in Tasmania for Christmas at the end of 2017. And I was just, you know, hanging out with Richie like I always do and doing a bit of writing. I'd already found a job in LA, a company that I wanted to work with in finance. And I was sort of, it was my last sort of holiday and, before going back to work. And, start work and, you know, in the real world. And Tim just rang out of the blue, Tim Kerrison, and asked me to come and, you know, Kenny had been there in Australia to train with Froomey, and Owen Dool got sick, got appendicitis and ended up in hospital. And Kenny had to go down and race down under. Tim asked me to go and train with Froomey. I thought, oh, why not? That's probably a good swan song to my sporting days. And yeah, we had a great camp, you know, and Froomey said, mate, you can't quit sport. Like, you got too much to offer. And Tim said that, you know, is there anything that sort of interests me, like racing on the bike again or, you know, any other sports? And going back to rowing, you know, we discussed everything. And I said, you know what, I did an Ironman and I loved it. And he said, you know, I think you could be quite good at that. And so that was that. And he said, you know, that they'd, the team would, you know, do what they possibly could to support me and see what I can do. And from then, you know, I remember that morning I trained with Froomey on the bike, and then that afternoon he took me down to one of the coaches that he worked with the national team down there on the Gold Coast to start teaching me how to swim. So, you know, one of the best coaches in the world. So, so yeah, just as you'd expect, I guess that organisation, they do everything pretty well, and that was sort of what set the bar, and obviously since then it's evolved to where we're at now. But the reality you know, if Owen Dool didn't get sick that year at Tour Down Under, I wouldn't even be doing sport right now. So, mate, you never know what's going to happen. I tell you that for free. You never know what's going to happen. You hang in there. It's interesting. I love American sports. I love any sport, but I love football and watching the Philadelphia Eagles going to the playoffs last year earlier this year, and the quarterback that ended up playing in the final playoff game nearly won them the game. And, you know, he started the year as an analyst on ESPN, coached the local high school football team, and ended up playing quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles in the playoffs when Carson Wentz went down. So, mate, anything can happen, you know. If you just hang in there, you never know what will happen.
Yeah, we got to keep your doors open. That's one thing that you've proven over the course of your career as an athlete is you've been adaptable and resilient. And, you know, going from all these different sports, just, you know, kind of repurposing yourself in a sense to continue and live the dream. It's awesome to watch.
Yeah, well, yeah, as I said, often, it sort of wasn't planned. I mean, as Canada and I, we did discuss it, and I said to them, you know, at the time, I'm still very good friends with everyone in marketing there. In fact, one of the guys, when we had to all of a sudden go to Australia for the race, me and my wife and the dog were in LA, and one of the marketing guys actually from Canada babysat the dog while we went off to Australia for the race. So they've always been great, but we always talked about that being a great idea. So it's really cool to see what EF been able to do with their alternative program. Obviously really good mates with Lockie. I spent a lot of time with him when I was in the US back in 2015-16. He's by the Guff, and yeah, it's awesome to see, you know, what he's up to, and I've always thought that is a, you know, something that could potentially happen in a world tour team. You know, you got so many guys, and then you see, yeah, Wout van Aert and obviously Van der Poel. You've seen Nino Schurter in the past do some stuff, so it's pretty cool. So it's cool to be somewhat a part of that. Obviously not to the level of those guys yet, but who knows? Maybe I'll get my race legs back and I'll start. I might have some success this time around. We'll see. I'm certainly in the. Guess I'm in the right team to find out.
Yeah,
I definitely can't say that I haven't had an opportunity after this one.
Well, and you still got a few years ahead of you to catch up with Valverde.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's it. I'm planning on stopping before I even get to his age. So who knows? But honestly, I don't want to stop. I mean, I'm a massive Tom Brady fan. I love it that he is, you know, doing what he's doing and saying, no, I want to go to 145, you know, and I believe I can. And you look at the success he's had. How would you argue? We have the same birthday. We're both August the 3rd. So who knows? Maybe there's something in that. If that's the case, I'll be around for another 10 years. So, you know, certainly the sport, I don't see, you know, why not. I mean, you never want to talk about this, but of course you have, you know, there's always the doping thing, you know, the stigma attached to endurance sports. And I think that the age of athletes, the fact that older guys and obviously the other extreme, the young guys, but the older guys, the one thing you cannot replace is stamina, you know, years of resilience, like the fact that your body is just so resilient and able to do that task. And, you know, doping, you know, I personally am confident that, well, not confident, I know you can succeed without cheating these days. So I think that that's where you've seen a change in the, you know, the older guys being able to hang on. And then on not only that, but then the young guys being able to come in with ridiculous amounts of enthusiasm and also a lot more resources available to them than what was potentially available to someone like yourself even. I know you came through a great program. I remember you with Livestrong and prior to that, probably even with USA Cycling. These guys now, I mean, you got 15, 16, 17-year-old kids going to altitude camps. I mean, it's great. They turn up already being basically pros for 5 years when they're 18.
Yeah.
So it's a really exciting time for the sport, I think. And, you know, and I know Tim Kerrison's one person that's always, you know, felt that the human body is designed, can do a lot more than any drug can manipulate it to if you allow it to just work the way it should work. And I think that's what we're seeing, because you know, the performances now are obviously even better than what we saw in the past. And it's because that's the way it is. You know, in the past, people didn't have to think that way. They didn't have to think about training and do whatever because there was some, you know, what one for a better word, shortcuts available. Yeah. Whereas now, it's a great time to be in sport, you know, particularly the sort of sports we're involved in.
It sure is. And it's, it's a strange time currently just with the climate, but let's hope that all racing resumes. I was actually considering coming out to Kona this year. So if it does still go ahead in October, I'd love to get together when we both head out to Kona.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the tricky thing with Kona is everyone has to travel to it. So, and it's on an island, I mean, in the current climate. You'd have to say, if you look at that, there's probably more chance of something like the Tour de France happening where everyone's already here. So once we come out of quarantine, you know, come out of this lockdown phase or, you know, the curves or the whatevers that everyone's talking about, you would expect that wherever you are geographically, you could be a part of things could happen. Kona, you know, as I said, involves us traveling from all over the world to a small island that, you know, probably doesn't really want to, you know, certainly wouldn't want that to anyone to bring that in. So that I would imagine logistically will be more difficult for Ironman to figure out. And the other thing is that Kona is a bit like the Olympics to me. I mean, and the Tour, I mean, it is. There's not as many people that know about Kona as what know about the Olympics and the Tour. But the reality is it is one of those monumental events. You know, it's a big, important event. And not having a Kona that allows all the athletes to be at their best for the biggest show, I don't think is right. You know, whereas if you have the Tour de France, yeah, you might have an issue with the Colombians or whatever, even being able to get back into Europe, or some guys have been on lockdown or whatever. But the reality is there's 21 stages, there's going to be an narrative, and you'll be the winner of that tour, of however that panned out, you know, it doesn't really affect it too much. Whereas Kona, you know, you wouldn't want to see it watered down by, you know, circumstances not allowing everyone to be at their best for it. So, but we'll wait and see. You know, back in the old days, they had one year where they had it in February and again in October. So who knows, maybe next year we'll get two Konas in. So that'd be good.
Yeah.
I certainly at this age, I don't want to miss a Kona. I'm the one that's improving and, I definitely don't want to miss it, but at the moment, you know, sporting events are, I think, crucial in helping get the world back on its feet, to be honest. I mean, giving people love sport, they love being able to watch live sport. But having said that, first and foremost, you know, the health of the world and getting it somewhat back to normal as soon as possible is the most important thing. So see what happens.
We will. Well, I know it's getting late there in Andorra, Cam. So I appreciate you taking the time. I'd love to get together at some point this year in person, but that may have to wait a couple months.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, buddy. Well, stay safe. Enjoy your early morning runs and kicker rides, and we'll be in touch.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Cam.
Cheers.
Bye, man.
My next guest is Ironman triathlete Heather Jackson. Heather was fourth place at the 2019 Ironman World Championships out in Kona. For 2020, Kona is still her overarching goal for the season. However, she has also decided to join the Wahoo Frontiers campaign and participate in some gravel events for 2020. The conversation you're about to hear was actually recorded back in mid-February out in Boulder, Colorado, when Heather, myself, and the other Wahoo athletes got together for a little training camp ahead of the season. So please keep in mind that there are a few events in this conversation that have subsequently been changed or postponed, most in particular the Belgian Waffle Ride and Dirty Kanza. Heather is still trying to figure out her 2020 race calendar and schedule, as most of us are. However, you can find Heather at the Wahoo All-In live stream events happening every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Wahoo's YouTube and Facebook channel. They're live streaming exercises, cycling on Monday and Friday, cross training and strength yoga on Wednesday. Heather will be there on May 4th and May 8th. May 8th is actually going to be a chat Q&A with Heather, so you can join Heather on Friday, May 8th, over at Wahoo's YouTube and Facebook channel. There are some other awesome athletes joining as well. Pete Stedna is going to be on there on Monday, April 27th, and he will also be there Friday, May 1st, doing a Q&A. And coming in mid-May, Colin Strickland is going to be joining May 11th, May 15th. That's what's coming up, but right now, let's hear from Heather Jackson. Well, I'm sitting here with Heather Jackson, a triathlete who's transitioning to gravel. And Heather, I actually just did some research on you. And you're kind of a, well, you're not kind of, you're definitely a badass triathlete.
Oh, no.
I actually just went to Wikipedia to see. I knew like of some of your results, but I scrolled deep into your results. And you've won a lot of triathlon.
Thanks.
So first off, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. No, this is awesome. Great to finally meet you in person.
Yeah, I know. You've moved to Bend kind of as I was leaving town, but yeah. you enjoying the Central Oregon lifestyle?
Oh, man, yeah. We can't think of anywhere else we'd rather be. Every time we're there, we're like, okay, it's pretty sweet. I mean, I'm sure since you've grown up there, changed quite a bit. It's a lot more traffic, a lot busier for sure. But you really can't beat everything you have there. So we love it there.
Well, we kind of did a flip-flop because you grew up in New Hampshire, only maybe 2.5 hours from where I now live. And you're on the West Coast. And
yeah.
I'm now on the East Coast with ticks and snowy winters and mud season. Deer flies, horse flies, everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you grew up and you were a hockey player through college, right?
I was, yep. Grew up ice hockey. I was soccer and ice hockey, actually, junior high, high school. And then I had the opportunity to play at an Ivy League school for hockey, which is ultimately what kind of made the decision, I guess, that hockey gave me that chance to get an education at a place I otherwise probably wouldn't have been able to go to.
So where did you go to school?
Princeton.
Princeton, wow. And you graduated?
Barely.
Barely. Okay, well, hey, that's more than I can say. And I was not at an Ivy League school. Well, so what brought you from ice hockey to triathlon? I mean, that's a pretty big jump. I mean, obviously you have an athletic background, but how do you go from a relatively physical sport to a sport that, you know, is spending 10 hours out there?
Yeah, no, totally. It was random, really. I mean, I was at home from college, I think my junior year, just at home in Exeter, New Hampshire during the summer. And my mom and dad actually had signed up for a local sprint triathlon. And it was up at Cannon Mountain. And it was just a shorter sprint triathlon. It was called Race to the Face. But I also grew up skiing, and it was Bodie Miller's hometown. He was supposedly going to be at this sprint try. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'll go with you guys. And he wasn't back there. I think he did it. But that's why I went with them. And it was just this short. I think it took us an hour maybe. And I loved it. It was like a whole new challenge. So I grew up playing team sports, and then all of a sudden was this event where it was like race against myself and see how fast I could go or if I could beat everyone else out there. So it was addicting because I've always been super competitive. So I wanted to win. And then, I wanted to do another one to try to, it was just this competitive nature.
I found that, I grew up playing team sports and, it was always very athletic and competitive with myself and my brother. And that was one thing that I found in endurance sport is that I was then solely kind of the dictator of how I did. There wasn't someone on the team who kind of like let you down.
Yep.
maybe sometime I was the, person on the team to let others down, but you're so dependent on a group of people. Whereas in most endurance sports, Ironman especially, like you are kind of, you curate everything. You're looking after your nutrition, your training, if something goes wrong, more often than not, you're the one to blame, which maybe you enjoy having that sense of responsibility.
Yeah, 100%. It's been interesting just the career through that I've had now in triathlon of totally taking full ownership of what you just mentioned of it. It's an individual sport, and what happens on race day and my race results are, 100% what I put into it and how I train for it, how I prep for it, how I, yeah, I have coaches or advisors and partners and sponsors and stuff. And it's how you work with your, you have that team behind you, but at the end of the day, it's, yeah, you, the cannon goes off and you're responsible for how that goes. So,
yeah. Well, so I don't know much about triathlon. My dad used to do Ironmans back in the 80s, and he still has some of his training diaries, and I've looked through, and yes. He was riding his bike more than I was riding my bike when I was racing at the world tour level. Awesome. Like, this is insane. Has training evolved as far as, you know, I mean, obviously you guys are training at a higher and more specific level just with the inclusion of, you know, with power meters, heart rate straps, you know, the kickers, you know, you can train year round now.
Yeah.
With much more science and kind of specific training. Have you noticed that even throughout your triathlon career that training's become more specific?
Oh yeah, completely. Yeah. When I first got into the sport, I was completely old school. I had no technology. I mean, I think I had like a watch on, I would use for my run and on the bike, like just to keep track of time and okay, I should do a 3-hour ride or a 4-hour ride, but I had no concept of, yeah, effort intervals or power numbers or heart rate, anything. And so then that slowly evolved a few years in, and I started using heart rate and power, but still kind of not really understanding it necessarily. I think you go through this progression as an athlete of you think you understand it, you start using it, for instance, like certain intervals at a certain power, but then how that fits into a bigger picture. And I feel like you can come full circle in your training where you're back to that. This is what I found recently of like going from staring at your power number and the littlest number matters down to the final second of every interval you're supposed to do down to like, okay, it is important to have these ranges, but it's not as like, I don't live and die by it anymore.
So yeah. It can definitely mislead you at times. If you don't use it as a tool to listen to your body, if you use it as a tool to dictate everything you do and
exactly.
forget to your,
exactly.
add that human element to it.
Totally. So I was just kind of looking back with my husband Wadi, and this is my 10th year as a pro. So it's crazy because those first, I would say 2 to 3 years, I didn't use the technology. And then for the next 2 to 3 years more, it was, I like lived and died by it. And if I missed a certain interval or my watts were low and I would, you know, be upset. And
yeah.
And now it's the final last couple of years have been completely opposite. I'm just like, I want to go all out or I'm going to go easy. Like it's, I feel like I've come full circle and you learn who you are as an athlete and what works for you and how you like to train. And so I feel like I'm just kind of finally coming into, yeah, just, I don't want to say tail end of my triathlon season, but I feel like I've matured through this career. I'm at, you know, kind of this, I'm realistic. I'm 35 at the Ironman level for females. I mean, it's endurance sports. So females, I think, peak a little later than men, but it's right now is basically my time. It's got 2-3, maybe a couple more, but 2 or 3 years at, I think, the highest level in Kona left. So when you boil it down to that, it's like, okay, 2 Konas or 3 Konas of maybe a chance to podium again or go for that title. And so it's, yeah, it's taking all I've learned for the last 10 years and kind of pulling everything out that's worked the best for me and putting that together for me as a Ironman triathlete.
Well, so it's interesting that you say you're coming towards the tail end of your, you know, Ironman career because you've decided to join the Wahoo Frontiers campaign this year, which is, could be a benefit to Ironman,
yeah.
But you know, to transition into racing gravel from triathlon.
Totally.
What's kind of dictated that decision? Why have you decided to do that, considering that you have two or three, I'm sure you've thought about this before I've asked you this question,
yeah.
But why dive into this before you've kind of ticked off all those boxes that are set for Ironman?
It's a good question. It could be one of those things like, oh, maybe I should wait another couple years and just say, okay, I think I've done what I can in triathlon and I'm ready for my next adventure. But for me, it's just the whole, I don't want to be the cliche, you know, answer and say, okay, gravel scene's exploding. But I just feel like, yeah, I see all these events and all these social media and all this like buzz around.
It looks really fun.
And it looks amazing. Yeah. And to be perfectly honest, it's like, I don't want to miss out on that. And if that means kind of transitioning now, giving it a chance, seeing if I really do love it, which I feel like I will, it looks awesome. It just looks fun. It looks, yeah, it's more kind of not lower key, because I think it's still going to be, you know, you have the best athletes in the world that want to get out there. They want to challenge themselves and race the best, but it's just in a more fun environment, at least what it appears to me. So yeah, I just don't want to miss out on that. I want to give it a chance. And I also think that some of these events could benefit. I mean, it's still going to be hard, long, hard days. And Ironman is an endurance day. It's a 9-hour day. I don't think it would take away from that, to be out on my bike for longer days and pushing it hard and having fun and racing. And then, you know, I'll definitely obviously focus in come Kona preparation time. But this season, I mean, just because it hasn't been done before doesn't mean it can't be, you know, the answer to finding that next level of fitness or skill or ability to push harder on the bike. So I only see it as possibly being even a bigger benefit than the rides I currently do.
Yeah. Well, you're not new to like off surface or non-paved surfaces. I noticed that you've competed in quite a few Xterras. Yeah. So you must be technically pretty savvy compared to maybe some triathletes who've only raced on their TT bike. I mean, you've done, you know, you've ridden your mountain bike. I see you've been in Oregon, you know, riding your gravel bike around Phil's Trail. So this isn't something new to you completely.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not like I'm, unsure of myself on unpaved surfaces.
Unpaved surfaces,
so, yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I raced Xterra a few years ago. I ended up going to the Maui Xterra Worlds, which was awesome. That's also on my bucket list to get back to one day.
And you were like fourth there?
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive. I mean, so you've already proven that you're a very versatile athlete playing collegiate ice hockey. You know, you were third place at Kona in, was it 2016?
Yes, correct.
Wow, I did good research.
That is really good.
I actually looked that up after I had recorded a little intro to another podcast, said that date, and then looked at it, and I was actually correct.
Very good.
Wow. So, I mean, your ultimate goal for 2020 is still Kona?
It's still Kona, for sure. That's still, I mean, I'm... Yeah, exactly. Full on for Kona this year, but kind of not taking a step back from triathlon early on in the season, but just kind of honing in on, I think, what needs to happen to maybe get back on that podium. And for me, one of the biggest things is the swim. So I'm actually putting in a really big swim block right now. So we actually left Bend and we're down in Arizona a bit early to work with a new swim coach down there. So I am still fully invested in just trying to figure out, I mean, for me, for non-triathlon listeners, the swim is the worst. Once I get to land, I'm good with the bike run. Yeah. So I guess not one last-ditch attempt to figure out the water, but I'm all in with that to see if I can figure that out before October. And otherwise, just keeping the season fun and light. For me, I get very, when it's Kona time, I get very, in the zone, focus in, it's all in. Every single thing I do every day is about that for about 10 weeks. So if I already go into that block kind of fatigued, not physically, but mentally, or just done with the season, that happened a few years ago and I had a really bad day there. So for me, I want to be fresh October. So right
probably
now,
fresh mentally as well.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You need every ounce out there to like want to dig. And if you're just tired, it's mentally, then... Yeah, you're not going to have a good day. So, I'm keeping it light this year, trying some new things, having fun, just new experiences. And
fun is important.
Yes.
I'll say that.
Yes.
So as far as gravel events this year, what are you looking at participating in? What are you looking at racing? You know, how's your gravel calendar look? And, you know, I'm sure there could be some events that may pop up between, you know, now and Kona that you don't foresee, but what are your big targets this year
totally.
On off-road racing?
Well, we are all here, the Wahoo Frontiers athletes, here in Boulder this weekend for the Old Man Winter
Rally. Old Man Winter Rally. Yes. And it's snowing, so they named it appropriately.
Yeah, it is. Should be interesting. This has actually popped up. This wasn't on my calendar, but again, just the opportunity to come here and hang with all the Wahoo athletes was something I couldn't not be a part of. So, but the first initial race plan is Belgian Waffle Ride in May. So I'm going to kick off my season with a try before that in Oceanside in April, and then we'll probably stay and recon the course and just check everything out for it, just so I'm ready. I know that's not necessarily – I know there's talk of gravel or what you categorize it as. I know it's also a lot of road, but
yeah.
Either way, it's a hard day on numerous surfaces, so just give that one a go this year. And then – I entered and was lucky enough to get a Dirty Kansas spot.
Alrighty.
So I was pretty stoked on that. As I mentioned to you earlier, we have a new event in triathlon this year it's never been done before. It's this new event coming up called the Collins Cup. So unfortunately, it's the same weekend.
And Ironman and DK in the same weekend would be quite the feat. If you could swing it.
Double. Yeah, no. So that's why that weekend is still up in the air. But if it works in, then DK is something that it looks awesome.
Well, it seems like an event that you're probably more prepared for than any of us, because you do 10-hour events all the time. You know, as far as the time required, the time out there exercising and pushing yourself, that's, you know, relatively common to you. I've never exercised for 10 hours straight.
I didn't mean to say yes, like more prepared than you. I thought you were going to say more prepared than some of the other events. Cause I look at that one and I'm like, oh, that's not like, oh, it's easy by any means, but oh, it looks like a standard day.
Yeah. So. And the more I've looked at it, the surface looks, I think that event is all gravel. Like, or dirt, where Belgian Waffle does have a significant amount of pavement road, from what I've heard.
Right.
It's all new to me. And so I've been kind of asking other gravel athletes questions, like really just picking their brains as far as what sort of advice can I get? But you're not a former gravel athlete. You're as new to this as I am.
Exactly.
We'll be doing our first race together on Sunday. Yeah. Well, I am curious as to, you know, I'm pretty particular about my head unit. So I'm on the Rome now. When I was racing the World Tour, you know, my element was like, my bolt was like, I was really particular how I set up my pages, especially for racing. I always had a GPX file. So like I could kind of see what was coming. In gravel, from what I've heard, a lot of these races are unmarked. So you need a GPX file to actually see. But what are you looking at in Kona? I mean, because you're in a time trial position, your head's down.
Yeah.
You know, what display are you actually looking at? Because for me, it's interesting.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Like a sports science, like, you know, I have a training page. I have like an overall view page of kind of like overall stats. I have a race page. I have, you know, my elevation page.
Yeah.
Are you particular about that? Or are you just like, you said, now you've listened to your body maybe more than you did in the race. Are you like, it's there, but I'm not looking at it? Or are you actually looking at the metrics during the race?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah. During the race. So I have the main page on overall time, watts, heart rate, and...
Power, maybe?
Power, yeah.
Yeah.
But then in Kona, I can't remember if I lapped it four times or three times. I want to say three.
Oh, you're doing separate laps in the race.
At a third way through, I lap it.
Oh.
So then you think of the race as only about 38 miles.
Ooh, that's a good mental trick.
Yeah.
For Kansas, that might be nice.
Yeah, it could work for Kansas.
Okay.
So I'm, so it's about a third of the way through, and... For me too, like I know what I usually ride Ironman bike legs in. It depends on the course, obviously, but if it's windy, hilly, so flatter courses, anywhere from 4.5 hours up to just under 5 is kind of the range depending on the course. So if you can, for me, obviously I want to go the fastest I can. About a third would be about 1.5 hours. So for me, it's in my head, I'm trying to beat 1.5 hours by 39 miles. And then I hit the lap and I'm starting 39 miles again. And I want to do it in under 1.5 hours. And then it's the final one.
Oh, so it's kind of like a way of like mentally pacing yourself. Like you're racing against yourself within a race, within a segment of the race.
Exactly.
That is a very clever trick. Cause I used to like sometimes mentally in races, like, you know, people oftentimes make this analogy of like, oh, pretend your body's like a car. I'm like, oh, so where's my gas tank based on how many miles do we have to the finish?
Yeah.
But this is like breaking that down to another level where you finish that first third of the bike leg, then you hold that for the, and the last third is usually going to be the most challenging.
Right.
But you're trying to compete with yourself when you're fresh, which is a great way to push yourself.
Yes. You also, though, on the first one, want it to feel easy. So it has to be this like balance of like, okay, I've only got two more of these, but how is this feeling? How is this feeling? And also you want to front load fuel early. So that's the other thing too, when I hear kind of some friends talking about Kanza, about the big thing being the fueling, because like it's different in say cycling or other other sports where you're not used to that. But literally for us, it's I fuel every 5 minutes. Like we have
every 5 minutes
a fueling plan, like for a 5 hour ride. So I'm used to that.
Yeah.
So for me, it seems like it would be second nature of just knowing how many calories to take in.
Yeah.
So I use the clock for that too on my my Bolt.
Yeah, that's a good way to remind yourself. And I guess if you're breaking it up, you know, thinking about, you know, breaking down into thirds and then 5 minute intervals of
just
fueling.
Sips, because you want to get through. Yeah. I try to get through 3 bottles in the hour and a half.
Okay.
So every half hour, be through a bottle. Every half hour. So 3 bottles for...
Wow.
So in Kona, I get through, about 10, 9 to 10 bottles.
On the bike. Goodness. Well, that is impressive. Well, thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Of course.
And let's have a fun old man winter. Let's be safe. I was out there riding today. It's a little bit slippery. I know you have big things planned for this year, so it's only
maybe
February.
Maybe I'll be running more of it than with my bike.
2 mile uphill, so you may be passing everyone on the uphill run. So, well, thank you, Heather.
No, thanks for having me.
There we have it, folks. Another episode of Breakfast with Boz being served by Wahoo. I hope you all enjoyed the show. Don't forget to subscribe. We'll be coming to you next week with another episode, and we're actually going to be continuing this podcast weekly for the foreseeable future. So please subscribe, please leave us a review on iTunes, and lastly, do not forget that you can join Wahoo and the Sufferfest every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Wahoo's YouTube and Facebook channel at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. On April 20th and 24th, we have Jack Thompson, the Ultra Cyclist. April 27th and May 1st, we have Pete Stetna. May 4th, May 8th, Heather Jackson. May 11th, May 15th, Colin Strickland. May 18th, May 22nd, Sarah Sturm. The lineup for this sounds awfully similar to my podcast. So if you've enjoyed the podcast, please join us over at Wahoo's Facebook and YouTube channel every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Thank you, folks. Please stay healthy, and I'll catch you next week.